Once again, the basements of our state are in danger. The spring of 2013 is officially the wettest Iowa spring on record. This hour, we'll talk about flood recovery. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. Unfortunately, a lot of Iowans already have plenty of experience with flood recovery, but it looks like this year we're going to get some more. Today we'll talk about what to do if your house gets flooded and what dangers you should be on the lookout for once you get things dried out. Bill will also answer questions about your basement and the other home improvement projects in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's another wet year, and already many people in the state are faced with the challenges of flood recovery. Unfortunately, probably a lot more of us will be faced with that by the time this summer is over. This hour, we're going to get some expert advice. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. You know what makes me an expert this time is if I get home early enough this afternoon and I beat the Des Moines River going over my road. That's going to make me an expert, but yeah, we may have, if the Des Moines River goes up a foot and a half, I'll be driving through about 6 inches of water. No, I'm backing up, and I'm not going to drive
right,
through.
Right, you're going to drive around.
Sorry, yes.
That's the responsible thing to do, because you're a responsible expert,
because
Bill.
Pemble told me to go ahead and drive through there, yes.
All right, that's engineer John Pemble. All right.
This is a nice group.
So Bill, of course, we've got a lot of basements are the biggest thing right now. People are finding their basements to be filling with water, even in areas where you don't see water sitting on the ground, which, of course, are a lot of places now. The first thing, of course, that we have to think about are making sure that our sump pumps are working. What do you need to do before the water inundates your basement to make sure sure that you're ready?
Most of us don't worry about it until the water is there. You know, if your sump pump hasn't cycled a few times, go ahead and run a hose into it. Maybe some people will run their softener recycler into it once in a while. It's not the best for the sump pump, but get some water in there and cycle it to make sure that it is running, because sometimes we get a lot of maybe some gravel down in the bottom. If it is running, you want to make sure that the water is going outside and away. Because we also have a tendency as Iowans to use those cheap little flexible hoses that come out of the outside of the house. You know, they kind of look like an accordion. And we pull them off when we're mowing, and we don't put them back on. So, it may be raining cats and dogs out there, and we hear the sump pump running, and the pump may be just dumping it right outside the house and back in, comes right back in the basement. So look at the whole system. And, a lot of people will run their sump pump line into a hard plastic pipe that may go maybe 100 feet away from the house. Well, if we didn't cover that with some hardware wire earlier on, we may have some critters that are, starting to use that as a home. So you need to run that and make sure the system is working. And it may be a time to upgrade to a sump pump, to a better one. If you have like the pedestal ones, the reason people buy those are like $30, and you get what you pay for. And in some cases, we may need a pump that might do 10,000 gallons an hour. I mean, it's a maybe a $300 or $400 or $500 sump pump. Basically, it's a sewage pump that takes a lot of water fast to get it away. Sometimes though. The downside is if you're in a really low area and you have water surrounding the house, we learned a lot, in the past flood events that we've had, either, in Cedar Rapids or on the Missouri River, that in some cases, for the safety of the house, it's actually better to let the water into the basement and equalize the pressure. Sometimes we try to keep the water out, and if your house is completely surrounded with water and water's trying to come in the windows, you may lose the basement by trying to pump it out. So a lot of pre-planning may go in if you're in a low area is to, have things that you can easily get out of there if you have a day's notice. There's a lot of prep things. I know in the Missouri River area, a lot of those people have quick disconnects on their furnace and water heaters and freezers just so they can get everything out fast in case they have a day's warning.
Okay. For a lot of us, though, it's too late now to prepare.
Yep,
so
it is.
We have to get the water out.
Right.
What steps do you need to take to make sure you're doing it the right way and you're not going to have lingering problems?
Well, you know, the right way is to have done your prep work, of course, is, you know, have the water shedding away. But you may have to do some sandbagging, keep the water from coming onto the house. You may have to do some temporary redirection of water. Maybe you live on a hillside and it comes right towards your house. Maybe if you just go ahead and lay, you know, you can get the sandbags or the tire tubes, you know, if you can't find sandbags. Sometimes even just nailing a board or laying a board and staking into the ground to help direct, keep the water away from your basement so that that sump pump doesn't quite get as much. Talking with Clay Masters this morning, it was a neat thing. What he did is he had a large pool of water behind his house, and you know it's close to the house, so he pumped that water away, and got it away from, you know, way and out of his yard, because a lot of times that pool of water, it dissipates, sure, but what it does, it just comes right back into your basement. So he took the proactive act of getting the water away into the, you know, to the sanitary or the storm sewer system. And where it, you know, would normally go anyway, but then it takes the pressure off of the sump pump. So, you know, if you have water around your house, that may be a way to do it. I've had the same
thing. Instead of just waiting for it to come into the basement.
Sure, I've had the same thing. Our front would be, in some cases, it's been 2 feet deep. It's just the occasion that we have where I live. And so I've put, you know, a 5-gallon bucket with holes in the sides and a large pump and pump that out and get it to lower ground because I didn't want that coming towards the house.
All right, and then when the water is drying up and it's time for you to get your basement back in working order, or unfortunately sometimes the first floor of your house as well, there are a lot of things to think about as far as actually getting the moisture out of there. And is it important to know where the water came from in the first place?
That's a good point. That's probably the biggest thing is to find out, okay, where is it? Like anything, like mold control. You know, mold will grow, especially if your basement got wet. Okay, 48 hours, and normally mold starts growing, especially, you know, in the heat and the warmth of the summer seasons. You know, if you find out where the water was coming in, then you can prep yourself for the next occasion. Okay, but you find them, take care of it. You know, there's a lot of products, there's a lot of companies that are out there that can, you know, come up with different systems. But if you find it and identify it, it may be something you can handle yourself. A lot of times what it is it's just coming around, say, a crack in a foundation. And if it's close to the top, it may be just because of the ground, but, you know, shedding the water towards your house. But, okay, let's say now that the basement's wet. Okay, now what do we do? And you've pumped the water out, first thing you want to do is dry that out, because the sooner you can dry it, the less chance you're going to have a mold issue. Like I said, it's 48 hours. So if you can get it more of a commercial, like a Dryzair type dehumidifier, it's amazing the difference between a commercial unit that you see the professionals use. And, you know, the ones I see are kind of a blue color, about 3 feet tall. Boy, these things can just pull the air or the moisture out of the air so fast, whereas these small units, you know, that we get at a store, you know, okay, they're taking a gallon out every 20 hours. That's not really doing much. So in a lot of cases, if there's no mold growth going, start getting some air movement in there. Start getting, you know, some fans going. And that's where sometimes we run into problems. So let's say we do have a lot of mold growth, and then people start running fans. Well, now you're starting to blow the spores all over the place, and they'll turn their central air conditioning on thinking, okay, I'm going to dry the house out by dehumidifying with the air conditioning. If you've got active mold spores going, you're just spreading them out throughout the house. So you have to make a decision. Is this something that I can do, or is this something that I want to hire a professional to do?
And how do you know?
Well, you know, if it's a small area of mold, it's okay to do it yourself. Let's say maybe, you know, 10, 12 square feet. You know, I mean, that's, you know, 2 foot by 5 foot, something small. If you start seeing a lot of mold growth, it's just better off to check with a professional or do some research. And it's, if you can quickly get on and say, go to the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, they have a really good manual on how to do cleanup after you've had a flood event. And, you know, in some cases, it's kind of neat. I'm helping a friend on a house right now that, you know, we've always said, okay, use bleach, you know, 9 parts water, 1 part bleach. Well, if it's open wood, like a lot of basements are, we still have a lot of open framing, and it's a wood. Wood's very porous. Is there's other products to use instead of bleach that are better, like this product called Savagran, S-A-V-O-G-R-A-N. That product is made for porous materials. So, you know, one product may not work for another, and that's why you may want to do some research on what product works for a specific material. If you have, you know, cardboard or paper or boxes, things like that, you might as well get rid of them because you're not going to, you know, be able
They're
to save them.
They're not coming back.
No, and, you know, if it's a very, very precious photo, yeah, you can. I mean, but it's going to cost a lot. Most of the time, clothes are easily salvaged, but there again, you need to do it the right way. Some, you know, if it's a wood product, wood like laminated furniture, sure, you can save it, but it's probably not going to be the same. You may have wood flooring, and if it starts buckling, let's say you do have wood flooring that got wet and it's buckled up 6 inches. You just take one board, a whole board out of the center of it, push it back down, and then just wait and let that wood acclimate and dry down. It has to be able to come back to the way it was, and then you put the piece back in. Of course, you're probably going to have to trim it.
What about what might be under that floor or behind that drywall as you're drying out? How do you know, where the problems are?
That's it. Is if you've got drywall in the basement and fiberglass insulation and it got wet, rip it out. And if you're going to rip that out, there again, you want to find the right guidelines, which usually state that you use a mask with the canisters. You know, that's not just a real, you know, I mean, you can wear certain fiber masks, but you're just better off to get a face mask with two canisters so you're getting good air. Wear like a Tyvek suit, a pair of throwaway overalls, because you're obviously not going to probably be living in the house while you're doing that cleanup. So you want to be able to wear things there that when you go back home, that you take this stuff off and you're not transferring what you have on those clothes to where you are now, you know, because it's going to fall on the carpet and you really didn't gain a whole lot as far as respiratory issues. But if the drywall's been wet, you need to get rid of it. And most of the time, if it's even wet up 6 inches, go up roughly 4 feet, because normally there's a horizontal joint of 4 feet. Cut it clear up there and pull the fiberglass insulation out if that's there, and then start to get this thing dehumidified and get it dried down. The sooner that you can, it's better. So, but, you know, let's look at flooring. What do you do with carpet? Well, you've got to get that carpet out of there. And there's some companies going around, you know, that maybe prey on people. Really do your due diligence. If they come in and say, oh, we'll do this, we've been doing this for years, okay, prove it to me. I want, third-party, efforts of showing that you have completed jobs, that you did a good job. I want a lot of references.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back, and we'll talk more about flood recovery and other home improvement projects as well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org with your questions. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and we're focusing on flood recovery. That's something that a lot of people are already starting to deal with in Iowa, and unfortunately, it looks like more and more people are going to have to deal with that in the near future. If you have a question for Bill, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start taking calls in just a moment. I want to touch on an issue, Bill, that you just mentioned, though, and that's about carpet. For so many people, it's really tempting to not get rid of the carpet, not get the carpet out of there. You don't want to have to spend the money. And for a lot of landlords, that's tempting as well. If you're in a basement apartment that gets flooded and you're renting, what are your rights? What do you need to demand from your landlord to make sure that you're safe?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because I was with some family members on the main level yesterday watching that rain come down when I was up in Cedar Falls. And I'm just looking, okay, now if it comes in this doorway, you know, what brand new place, what's going to happen? And did they seal here? And I'm thinking all this kind of things. Well, you know, if that carpet is wet, that landlord has to, you know, clean it. He cannot have a product in there and by product I mean, you know, like say carpet or anything that's wet, that's producing mold spores, that creates a unhealthy environment for the renter. So the landlord should go in there and hire, you know, they should hire a professional license, I mean, an insured professional that will come in and either remove the carpet or dry it down completely, and then you know, make sure that it's clean. So a lot of instances, if it's wetted severely, okay, they're going to probably pull all of it out and replace it. The other issues, though, okay, if the carpet's wet, well, now what about where the trim work is? In a lot of cases, if the carpet was very wet, depending on the type of, you know, base molding in a room, okay, that might be mold build up behind the base. That's always a good thing to do is if you do have a wet carpet, let's say you are a renter, I would ask the landlord to say, hey, you know, I know that you've done the carpet, but please can we look behind the base molding, because that's a perfect area, that drywall behind it. There's cellulose, you know, wood product, the paper product there that once the mold gets in there, it's dark, you know, it's cool. It can just take off and just create a huge mold colony behind the baseboard. I've seen it, you know, that and you think everything else is fine, but yet it's active growing. So that, you know, you have to do a little detective work. But yeah, if it, you know, you can't be living in an apartment and that if you walk in there and you immediately smell that. I listened to a speaker from the Department of Public Safety one time, and they or Department of Public Health, and they said the same thing. The best indicator of mold is your nose. If you can smell it, it's not healthy. So it needs to be taken care of.
Now, you talked about quick release and removal for furnaces and water heaters,
right,
and
yeah,
freezers, but
yeah,
of course there's a lot of electricity that goes through the walls in your basement and
there
in
is
the first floor of your house. What about your electrical?
You know, that's the case, is you want that electrical shut off outside, or you have an electrician, you know, shut it off at the panel. Well, where's the panel? Half the time it's in the basement. Well, you know, okay, if you have someone that maybe not have wired it correctly, that water, you know, can either be, you know, shutting circuits down. You may have cases where it's a small amount of water where, you know, you could easily be electrocuted. So, you know, in those kind of cases, you need to maybe think about it and say, okay, I'm just going to put on some rubber boots. That may not be enough. There, you know, that you just a pair of rubber soled shoes or a pair of, you know, cheap rubber boots aren't going to, it's not, you know, worth risking your life over. So in those cases, you may want to, you know, get an electrician to take a look at it. A lot of times we just have the power company shut the power down the whole house and then bring in a generator to provide electricity for doing work. It's much safer. And a lot of the electrical, if it's been submerged, is going to have to be replaced anyway. Now, that's where we've learned that, you know, if we're in a flood-prone zone or if we do have wet basement a lot, is we've, you know, suggested, okay, have the electrician go ahead and put a small, like say a circuit breaker or an overriding switch of some sort of control that you can shut the power off to the lower level, you know, with just one click from upstairs. So then you can safely go downstairs.
All right.
That's just really scary to me. You know, I'm glad you said that because most sump pumps, you know, their circuit doesn't have a ground fault circuit interrupter on it because they don't want that just going off if there's some dampness in the air. Well, then the sump pump doesn't work, so they're not off. And so it's very easy for somebody to go over and reach down maybe in the sump pit and try to adjust the sump pump and whack. So that's really scary. It really is.
All right, let's get to the phones, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And John is up first from Waterloo, where there's a lot of water. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I had some geothermal guys put well, and they drilled a 24-inch circle in my basement last fall.
Okay.
And so I'm getting some seepage through that, you know, interstice there, or they put new concrete in there, but it's evidently not tight enough to hold the water out. And I'm wondering if you can chip that out a little bit or something, or to a certain depth, and maybe put some kind of epoxy or something there that's strong enough seal that'll bond both sides and seal.
Can you get to it from the outside?
Outside of what?
I mean, is this through the floor or through the wall?
Through the floor.
Oh, okay, through the floor. Yeah, you could. There's some epoxies that you can drill and inject, or you can get an elastomeric product. You know, elastomeric just means that it will stretch as the concrete expands and contracts. Something like called like a rubber wall, or there's some Thoro, T-H-O-R-O products that you can buy at most hardware stores. That is a either roll-on or heavy brush-on that you can put over that. It's you know, it's a waterproofer. Now, so it's coming up through that crack.
I mean, yeah, the water is. It's, you know, I mean, you couldn't tell that there was a crack there, but I mean, the new concrete and the old concrete.
Sure.
In 60 years, there was never a problem, but now I've got some water trying to sneak in.
Is there a sump pump somewhere around that can relieve the pressure?
No, it's kind of, the floor drain's about 20 feet away, and it's sort of graded that way, so it tends to get there. But
oh, okay. So you've got some hydraulic pressure, you know, trying to push it up there anyway.
Right.
You can, you know, I would go ahead and, you know, chip it out, like you say, put some epoxy there, and then get a, just brush on a heavy waterproofing coating around that seam, and if that doesn't work, you know, then you may have to install a sump pump, and it might not be a bad idea anyway to relieve the water pressure.
How deep would I need to chip out?
It depends on the product. The seams that we've always done before, I usually go down about half an inch. And I know
okay.
That seems like a lot, but you've got to have some surface for that epoxy to grab. Otherwise, it's just like laying caulk on top of
how wide?
Bare concrete, about half an inch.
Okay.
About a half inch by half inch, and it may not look pretty, but at least you're getting some more material down in there. But there are some epoxies where they just drill small holes in a series, and then they inject that into the crack. But that's normally a commercial product done by you know, someone who's trained to do it.
Well, it wouldn't follow a circle very well, would I? I'd have to drill all the way around the circle.
That's
probably.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Good. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yep.
Right.
Thanks.
Thanks for your
Bye.
Call, John. And next up is Zach on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Zach.
Good morning,
Zach, are
Zach.
You there?
Yes. Hello. How are
Hi.
You?
Yeah. What's your question?
You all had talked about removing insulation when it got water damage, like in the basement.
Right.
And I was just wondering, is that including like spray foam insulation? And if so, what would be the best way to go about that, since that's kind of a whole different animal than,
you know,
the land?
It is. Now, you know, and it also depends if it's a closed cell foam, you know, a very rigid type of spray foam,
uh-huh.
or if it's an open cell foam. If it's an open cell foam, it is water permeable. So, you know, if it was me, I would play it safe, and I would probably cut the open cell out if it was a closed cell, you know, the rigid spray foam. You know, I may not, but the problem sometimes becomes is there maybe where the foam has shrunk down away from the studs, is there a crack on the left and right? If that's the case, then I may pull it out. That's why a lot of times now what people do is they will put a solid, say, 2 inches of extruded polystyrene, you know, the colored,
yeah.
You know, sheet foam up against the concrete wall first. And, you know, then they would insulate, especially either with an open cell. But then they can trim that off and then reapply later once you've dried it down.
Right. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. But you're right. That is a whole other animal, and that's something we're really going to have to keep tabs on in the future, you know, to see what is the best practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing
thanks
that up. Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Zach. And we've got a lot of email questions. Ed in Iowa City says he wants to know your opinion on the water extract system. It's vinyl baseboard-like channels which require no digging or trenching inside or out.
You know, that goes back to back in the 70s where we used to put a channel around basements that water would, you know, come across the floor, get to the channel, and the channel would take it all the way around the foundation perimeter on the inside to a sump pump. It's a way to direct the water is what it does. Or in some cases, it can catch the water at the seam of the floor in the foundation wall. Some concrete block walls or cinder block walls will use something like that system. They'll drill holes in the bottom course of the block. The water comes into that, say, into that vinyl base. And then that vinyl base acts like a gutter and takes the water away. It's just a method of directing the water away. And really, in some cases, they work pretty well. I mean, they really do, especially if they relieve a little bit of pressure. And if you don't have a whole lot of water at one time or coming up through the floor, like previous caller, then they do work fairly well. You just have to make sure that on the installation. Now, I was involved in a case where they put in something similar to that, and the adhesives they used, for some reason, it was the strangest thing. The adhesives they used caused this chemical reaction, and the smell inside the house, the person who was living there, she had to move out because of the off-gassing of these different materials. I'd never seen anything like it. So just make sure that the people have done it before, again, like we're always saying. But make sure if you do notice an odor, a different odor than what you had before, and it was a strain, it's hard to, and I hate to say it, but it smelled like a sweaty horse. To me, that's what it smelled like. But it was, it wasn't the most pleasant thing. If you have been around horses, I guess you wouldn't have any reference point. But anyway, that's what you're going to have to watch out for. Sometimes just materials that aren't made for each other.
All right. Sweaty horse.
Yeah, here you go.
Check.
Now. Yep. Check that off.
All right. This is a question from David in Waukee. We have a sump pump located outside one corner of our house. It usually keeps that corner of the basement dry, which is its purpose. But in an extreme wet period, water still gets into that corner. We wonder if the pump is deep enough. What do you think?
It may not be deep enough, and it may not be large enough in capacity. It may be a very small pump that maybe only, maybe moving 100 gallons an hour. We don't really, know for sure. But in some cases, though, as well, is the water getting to the pump. Is maybe the tile's clogged. Maybe this is the type of pump that has holes in the inside of the pit where the water comes around it. Maybe those are clogged. So a lot of times it's all this water just can't get to the pump. So, they may need to do some maintenance, do some cleaning. If it's an older home, especially, let's say, built in the 60s, we used, I remember my dad, they were using like clay tile. And the clay tile, they put an old shingle across the top of the joints, and then the water would come in. Sure, well, okay, that's, gee whiz, almost 50 some years. And so 50 years ago, and then, in 50 years, the tiles are full. So you may not have a system of getting the water to the pit. So that, that may be more the issue than that pump.
All right. This one's from Sue. So we upgraded our sump pump to a more powerful one. Not being very handy, we were so proud of ourselves after we hooked it up. We plugged it in and water sprayed all over our basement because the pipes leading to the outside were leaking at the connection points. Yikes. How do we seal the connections on these pipes? Is our sump pump too powerful for these pipes?
No, it may be the pipe is too small. It depends on what kind of pipe you use. If you go to a bigger pump, you usually have to use, like, say, a 2-inch PVC pipe, a white plastic plumbing pipe, and all the fittings are glued rather than the hose connections. There may be something wrong. Maybe something is plugging it at the end, because that's about the only time that I've ever seen where you've had the leaks. You also want to make sure that you have the back check valve installed the correct way. The back check valve, what it does is when the pump kicks on, the water in the line, maybe depending, like say if it goes up 8 feet, the back check valve prevents all that water that's 8 feet high from coming back down into the pump. So, but if you put it in backwards, then it's gonna try to blow the pipe off, but normally the fittings aren't glued correctly.
Okay, and this is a related question from Bonnie. She says, our sump pump kicks on 3 to 4 times per minute in the last few days. We have a walkout basement in back where the sump hose lays. When our sump pump shuts off, I'm hearing a gurgling from the pipe leading outside the house, which lasts for several seconds, sometimes until the pump turns on again. It sounds like water is siphoning back up inside the hose. Also, the sump hose outside has sprung a few pinhole-sized leaks. So question number one, should there be some sort of siphon break in the house, in the hose?
There you go. It's a back check valve, and it's usually placed right up above the sump pump, and then you won't have that siphoning noise. And if you have a beagle in the backyard, you're not going to have much of a hose left anyway. So you're going to have to put a kind of a beagle-proof pipe that comes out the back, something they're not going to gnaw and put holes into.
So, and if there are holes in the hose?
Yeah, get it replaced. Or okay. use a heavier pipe that's going to last longer. Those little black ones, especially if you leave them out, the sun breaks them down, they fall apart, and then all you have is a sprinkler hose, and it comes right back into your basement later anyway.
All right, and this one's from Mark. I have water coming in a corner of the basement. We do not have a sump pump. The corner is under the sidewalk in front of the house, which is sloping away from the house. The corner is next to the attached garage. This water usually seeps in. I see and hear water coming into the pit from the tiles that run around the basement. Could something be wrong with the tile? How do we troubleshoot this? Should we put in a sump pump? What do you think?
If you can get access to that pipe anywhere, a lot of the plumbers now have a diagnostic equipment that they check, sewage lines with, that they can run to the drain lines as well. Even though that concrete is shedding away from the house, it just depends on how the home was built. If it's like, say, a 4 foot wide sidewalk, the water can go out 4 feet and then comes back underneath the sidewalk, and so we didn't really gain a whole lot. So that, a lot of times there has to be a lot of diagnostic work to see where the water is coming from. You can also try and use an expansive type caulking, one that if you go to, a hardware store and ask for the caulking we use on control joints for concrete, and then put that between the house and the sidewalk and try that as well. But, a lot of times, if he can hear it gurgling, where's that gurgle sound coming from? They're going to have to go in there and really do some research as to where it is coming from. It's hard to say.
All right.
Right
and he
now.
Also has pooling in the backyard, which might be a good opportunity to take a pump outside and pump that water away.
Yeah, that may help right there.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back. We'll get to the phones again when we get back at 866-780-9100. You can also send your questions by email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about water. There's plenty of it in Iowa. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here with me today. And if you have questions about your sump pump, about your basement, about the first floor of your house, or that big pool of water that's just sitting next to your house, give us a call. 866-780-9100. Is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Craig is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I just wanted to be considered that the tiling around the foundation of the house for the sump pump system acts as a conduit to direct radon gas right into the basement.
Is that a danger, Bill?
Well, it is part of a conduit, but also all of the soil underneath the slab as well, because concrete doesn't even slow radon down. And it's there's an issue that we're just starting to look at right now is the point you just brought up is, tile, concrete, footings, all the soil around the house brings in radon. And here we have a lot of radon systems. Mitigation systems that use a fan or a passive system, which just uses different air pressures, but to pull the gases, say, through the tile, like you're saying, or, from the soil underneath the foundation floor. But then we have our sump pump system may run to daylight, which means that it has just a drain going from the pit that goes to a lower level, like, say, if you live on a hillside. How does that affect the radon system? Well, okay, when the radon fan kicks on, where's the back pressure to create a pressure to draw, radon, say, through the tubes? Well, all it's doing is pulling it from outside through the pipe and out the roof. So that's something that we need to start looking at, on the radon issue as well. But, yeah, many houses use...
So your drainage system may actually reduce the capabilities of your radon mitigation system.
Yes, it may. It's just depending how installed. And that's why, in many cases, you need to bring in a professional. It's not just something you throw a pipe in and think, okay, I've taken care of it. But in many homes, that tile, like he's saying, that is the way, one of the main ways to bring the radon gas to a collection area and out the roof. And so if it's plugged, it may not, it's not going to, the efficiency of the mitigation system isn't going to work as well, but really we're still looking at, that the radon's coming in through unless there was a mitigation, basically a system of where there was sealed polys underneath and around the foundation, a whole system when the house was built. And most older homes, all older homes don't have that. So, but that's a good point that The drainage system also doubles in many homes as your radon collection system. That's a good point.
All right. So thanks a lot for your call, Craig. Glenn is on next, and we're going to move away from the basement to the roof of the house for a moment. Hi, Glenn.
Well, I really didn't mean to do this.
Oh, that's okay.
That's all right. What's your question?
All I wanted was to get Phil's number.
Uh-oh.
So he could, we have a large church up here, and we got to shingle it, and we get different ideas on shingling, and I thought if I could talk to him someday, you don't want to talk to me today.
Oh.
And I told your consultant that, but that's he put me on.
Oh.
Phil, is there some way that, do you hire out to do consulting?
Not very often anymore, no, but sometimes I do, so... yeah, do they have your number here then, get a hold of you?
I can give my number.
Yeah, don't give it over the air, but yeah, just, right, Jared? Yeah.
Yep,
I didn't mean to bother your whole program.
Oh, well, no, that's fine. I'm glad
Glenn,
you called in.
Thanks for your call, and Bill will get in touch with you. All right.
Chocolate chip cookies, that's the big draw.
Right, next up, let's go to Walt in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Walt.
Hello.
Hi, what's your comment?
Makes a point on your sump pit. If you have a tile around the house that feeds into the sump pit, you want the float to go on the pump so it doesn't cover that inlet into the sump pit. Otherwise, you're going to back water up into the tile and still have some flooding in the basement.
Yeah. You know, there's so many things to remember about this. You know, a lot of people, just drop this pit down this or this pump down the hole and it takes care of it. You're right. I mean, it just depends where it goes. There's so many variations. I'm glad you said that. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Donald's up next in Nevada. Hi, Donald.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a house that's actually in north central Iowa, and it has a tile as the on top of a poured concrete wall for the foundation.
Okay.
And there's water coming in at the joint between the concrete and the clay tile, but this joint is an inch or two above the ground level.
Okay.
So why is it coming in up there? And it's not coming in anywhere around on the poured concrete.
That's a good question. So the seam is an inch and a half out of the ground all the way around the house?
Well, no, but it is in the area where the leak is. There's some areas where it's about at ground level or maybe a half inch below the ground level, but it's not leaking in those areas.
Okay, you know what's neat about that old block, the cinder block, is the clay tile, is the cores go horizontally rather than vertically like concrete block does. And if the water can get in somewhere, depending on how the block were laid, is it acts like basically like a conduit or a drainage tile, the water can run all the way around and come and find a hole where you would least expect it. That's why sometimes, you know, we have a leak maybe in the middle of a room in the ceiling. Well, it's running from somewhere else. I would find maybe a mason to go along and check the joint between that concrete and that cinder block. And there's maybe a hole somewhere that they're going to have to take care of, that water's coming in and then it's leaking out where you would least expect it. The only other thing would be that the foundation wall is so wet below that because of capillary action, you know, concrete's just a big sponge, that the water may be going up and then hitting the cinder block, which is much more dense, and then the water's pooling at the top and leaking in there. There can be a lot of places where that water can come. It could be climbing up and coming sideways. But I'm just kind of thinking that it's probably running through your tile, that tile block somewhere, and coming out where you would least expect it.
Yeah. Okay.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
But I would get a mason to take a look at it. You know, find a bricklayer to take a look at it, because they're used to working with materials that are completely different in densities and in how to seal the two.
All right, Donald, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go next to Al in Ankeny. And Al, I think you have a similar question to one of our email questions as well. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, we're in a 20-year-old house that has a sump pump in the basement. Never had a problem until about 4 or 5 years ago when we had 5 or 6 days of rain and then our electricity went out and we had wet carpeting in the basement. had a similar problem about 2 or 3 weeks ago when our electricity went out. Fortunately, we hooked up a generator just in time. And we also have a radon problem.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, do we try to handle the radon first and then the sump pump backup system, or we do the reverse? And what's your best recommendation for a sump pump backup system?
You know, I like the actually, I like a generator system the way you have as a backup generator. An electrician can, depending on the unit, but most of the time is they can wire that so it automatically comes on so that your normal sump pump runs. Because what scares me about a lot of the backup systems is they're working off a battery, and the pump is so doggone little that it's probably not going to handle the water that you get. So I would handle it so that you can keep using a good sump pump. And not, you know, rely on a little battery thing that may last you a day and then it's pumping, you know, 20 gallons an hour or something. But the other thing is, too, is if you put in a radon mitigation system, especially a 20-year-old house, I don't know if they put a vapor retarder or vapor barrier underneath your basement floor or not, but if you put a radon mitigation system in, which is a pipe going down into the sump pit or into the through the slab and into the ground below, that once the fan is operating on the system, it will create a negative pressure underneath the floor, and it pulls a lot of moisture out of the slab. And it's kind of neat to find out that when people have a radon mitigation system in, a lot of them will call the installer and say, hey, you know what, I can't believe it. It's been a year and my basement's so much drier than it was last year. I'm not running my dehumidifier anymore because that system is pulling so much moisture out of the ground. Underneath the slab and around the foundation. So, you know, I would hook up the sump pump, have the electrician hook up a good generator backup that way, and then put the radon mitigation system in.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Al. Next up, we're going to go to Joe in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I am actually calling for my brother in Northfield, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
I was working on his basement this winter. Him and his wife moved into a house there, and it's about 15 years old, but the basement was never finished. And so it's been framed up and insulated and has had the plastic vapor barrier up for about 15 years.
Okay.
And I was trying to get it ready for drywall and got a bunch of studs put in, and I had to put studs into some of the outside walls, and it's one of the walls is access to the lawn. It has a sliding glass door and is no block along the wall or anything. And along that wall, there's been, as I'm putting studs in, there's a lot of rot and mold
yep.
in the inside of the wall and on
right.
the fiberglass insulation.
Yep.
So do we have to rip all that out, including the mold and rotted wood?
Yep.
Or can you spray on that? The spray-on insulation that's closed cell, and that'll seal it all up.
You know, if there's been a lot of rot and moisture and mold into the wood, I would replace it if at all possible. Yes, you can encapsulate it. There's a product called Milgo as well that, you know, they encapsulate the wood. But, you know, there's a lot of things out there, that Savogran that I mentioned, that's one product. Zinsser also makes a really good mold and mildew paint that's a good encapsulation paint that once you've got the wood cleaned, that you encapsulate
okay.
it. But you just back up exactly what we did in the 70s and 80s all wrong, is we were using fiberglass insulation against concrete, and then we put a vapor barrier on the inside. We trapped the moisture in there. There's nowhere for it to go. Condensation like crazy, and we were rotting walls out and creating mold. And Northfield, Minnesota, you know, that particular area, I'm familiar with that area, you know, that house was probably built before Minnesota required the different basement methods. And you're lucky. If you go to the Department of Commerce, the state of Minnesota,
yeah.
Go to there. They have a really good site on how to handle that exact system or the issue that you have right now. They've got a really
okay.
good online flyer. It's the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And just Google
okay.
that and then wet basements. But I would pull it out, me personally. I don't, you know, encapsulation's okay sometimes. It's a little bit, but if it's a lot, I just don't trust it because any of that wood could be rotted, and if there's any structural issues there at all, you know, you're just kind of covering it up.
All right. So then on the three walls that have block, that we've also found like a little bit of moisture back there, kind of like the calcium deposits and things like that from it being moist back there. Should we pull all that fiberglass out and put the spray and closed cell insulation in there? Or
I would. But you know, that's, I don't, it's not my money. And, but I just don't trust fiberglass up against a concrete block anymore after, or even poured walls. After seeing all of the things we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, it just really scares me because, you know, if you drywall that, let's say you don't use a vapor barrier, you drywall it and then you paint the drywall. And if they use a couple of coats of oil-based paint, it's almost exactly the same as the poly. And then the moisture moisture's trapped in that wall again. That's why we've switched to, in many cases, a wall like that, they end up waterproofing the inside of the foundations. We're going to see a lot more of that, waterproofing the inside and then, say, spray foaming like you're saying.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Eric in Grimes. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
When we built our home 7 years ago, we had the plumber put in an ejector pump in the basement because we're on septic.
Okay.
And it's above, between the floors anyway. So, and it was never plugged in up until this past spring when I started wiring for the basement finishing. And now the ejector pump seems to be the only pump that's running when the sump pump's not running. And I don't know if the guys who did the tile around the basement, they ran it in there instead of the sump incorrectly. But my plumber is telling me that I'm probably going to have to no longer use that ejector pump as an ejector pump since it's working.
It sounds like they plumbed it backwards, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. The only thing they didn't do is put the ejection or the waistline into the sump pump. So that's
because they have to be separate. I'd have him come back and redo something there. Sorry.
I'll get him in there and take a look at it.
Yep.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for your call. And last call of the day, we're going to have to make it short. Wayne in Des Moines. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. Say, just real quick, about 13 years ago, we bought a house, and it has a sump pump as well as an asbestos removal system with a fan, and it's all encased. But one of the things we noticed, and I'm concerned about, is that they whoever put it in had the drainage from the sump pump go directly to the stack instead of out of the house. I wanted to find out if there was a reason they did that was good, or is this a bad thing that needs to get fixed?
So that's going into the sanitary side of the system?
Yeah, it's going right into the sewer stack.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, yeah, that's a – boy, city finds out. Yeah, don't give me your name. Shh, quiet. Yeah, no, you need to get that switched over as quick as you can, and it needs to go to the storm system.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll really overload the sanitary if we all did that. But, yeah, shh, quiet.
Yeah.
Get it fixed now. Yeah.
All right, Wayne, thanks a lot for your call. And Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Charity.
I hope when you come back next month that this will all be a damp memory.
I hope I'm not canoeing to get here.
Right.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. We'd like to hear your thoughts on things you've heard on the show. We'd love to hear your suggestions about things you would like to hear on the show. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow, it's Horticulture Day. Cindy Haynes and Richard Giron will be here. We'll talk about some great ways to use technology in the garden. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.